Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Vijana Vallabha Girivada Dhari Gopijana Vallabha Girivada Dhari Yashoda Nandana Gajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Gajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivajika Charya Stotara Sata Shri Shri Madhas Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Nantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Agyana Timirandasya Ginanjana Shahakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadahmayam Tadati Svapadantikam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evaja Patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Okay, we're reading from 7th Canto, Chapter 6, text, Chapter 6, entitled Prahlad Instructs His Demoniac Schoolmates. We're on text 24. Tasmat sarveshu bhuteshu dayam kuruta sauhridham bhavam asuram munmucha yayatu shatyadhukshajah. Tasmat sarveshu bhuteshu Dayam kuruta sauhridham bhavam asvaram unmucha yayatu shatyadhokshaja. Tasmat sarveshu bhuteshu dayam kuruta sauhridham bhavam asvaram unmucha Yayatu Syatyadhokshaja. Tasmat Sarveshu Bhuteshu Dayam Kuruta Psohridham Bhavam asuram unmuchya yaya tusyadyadhokshaja tasmat therefore sarveshu to all bhuteshu living entities dayam mercy kuruta show sauhridam friendliness bhavam the attitude asuram of the demons who separate friends and enemies unmucha giving up yaya by which tushati is satisfied adhokshaja the Supreme Lord who is beyond the perception of the senses. Translation, therefore, my dear young friends born of demons, please act in such a way that the Supreme Lord, who is beyond the conception of material knowledge, will be satisfied. Give up your demoniac nature and act without enmity or duality. Show mercy to all living entities by enlightening them in devotional service, thus becoming their well-wishers. Purport. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 18:55, Bhaktyamam abhijanati yavan yaschasmi tatvataha. One can understand the Supreme Personality as he is only by devotional service. Prahlad Maharaj ultimately instructed his class friends, the sons of the demons, to accept the process of devotional service by preaching the science of Krishna consciousness to everyone. Preaching is the best service to the Lord. The Lord will immediately be extremely satisfied with one who engages in this service of preaching Krishna consciousness. This is confirmed by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita 18:69. Na cha tasman manushyeshu kashchin me priyakritamaha. There is no servant in this world more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be one more dear. If one sincerely tries his best to spread Krishna consciousness by preaching the glories of the Lord and his supremacy, even if he is imperfectly educated, he becomes the dearmost servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is bhakti. As one performs this service for humanity without discrimination between friends and enemies, the Lord becomes satisfied, and the mission of one's life is fulfilled. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore advised everyone to become a guru devotee and preach Krishna consciousness, yare dekha tare kaha Krishna upadesh. That is the easiest way to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By such preaching, the preacher becomes satisfied, and those to whom he preaches are also satisfied. This is the process of bringing trees and peace and tranquility to the entire world. Bhoktaram yagya tapasam sarva loka maheshvaram suridam sarva bhutanam gyatvamam shantim richati. One is expected to understand these three formulas of knowledge concerning the Supreme Lord. One, that he is the supreme enjoyer, that he is the supreme proprietor of everything, and that he is the best well-wisher and friend of everyone. A preacher should personally understand these truths and preach them to everyone. Then there will be peace and tranquility all over the world. The word sauhridam, friendliness, is very significant in this verse. People are generally ignorant of Krishna consciousness, and therefore, to become their best well-wisher, one should teach them about Krishna consciousness without discrimination. Since the Supreme Lord Vishnu is situated in the core of everyone's heart, everybody is a temple of Vishnu. One should not misuse this understanding as an excuse for such words as Daridra Narayana. If Narayana lives in the house of a Daridra, a poor man, this does not mean that Narayana becomes poor. He lives everywhere, in the houses of the poor and those of the rich. But in all circumstances, he remains Narayana. To think that he becomes either poor or rich is a material calculation. He is always Sadaishvarya Purna, full in six opulences in all circumstances. Okay, so we're continuing. Prahlad Maharaj, he's This verse is about preaching, and here Prahlad Maharaj, he's preaching to his classmates. So basically his preaching is that, you know, everything that we're being taught by our teachers is completely useless. Don't listen to it. Just do Bhagavad Dharma. Surrender to the Supreme Lord and try to please him. And just before this, he basically said that pleasing the Supreme Lord, it's so easy, even a caveman can do it. So now we're on the next verse here where he's talking about how to please the Lord. So he said that you should please the Lord in previous verses, and it's easy, anybody can do it. So then now Prahlad gives us more information about how to please the Lord. So he said two things in this verse. One thing was that first, give up your demoniac nature of enmity and duality. You know, don't try to see as friends and enemies and that kind of thing. And then second is to show mercy or friendliness or affection to all living beings. And then by showing affection and mercy to all living beings, you can satisfy the Supreme Lord. So we can ask the question, why is it that by satisfying all living entities or trying to satisfy other living entities, why is that satisfying to Krishna? Like Jordan, like if I show mercy and friendship and affection to you, naturally I could see that you're pleased because I'm pouring so much affection into you. But how is it that if I pour affection into Dan, how are you satisfied? You know, so how by satisfying other living entities is it that Krishna is satisfied? Mikey? Krishna wants more friends. So how is it by satisfying other living entities that Krishna gets more friends? So if you're friendly with other living entities, it gives the other people like an example so that they can learn how to be more friendly, so that they can be more friendly to Krishna. Is that what you said? Oh. Right. Prabhupada elaborates on what being friendly means, by preaching, showing mercy to others, that's how to do it. Okay, so you're preaching, so you're teaching people how to be better friends for Krishna, because Krishna wants nice friends. Another way to understand this is that the Lord actually, it's described that the living entities are actually parts of the Lord. You know, they're parts of God, and in fact, in some places it's described that the living entities are almost like another form of the Lord. In the sense that, Krishna resides in all, is Paramatma in the hearts of everybody. You know, here all the bodies are temples of Vishnu. So then by serving all the living entities, you're serving Vishnu, Krishna. So in that sense, it kind of can be related. If you're serving others, you're kind of also serving Krishna. And we also hear too that, especially the Lord's devotees, the Lord's devotees are sometimes described as like constituents of the absolute truth. You know, that's actually how the Lord gives his mercy to others, is through his devotees. So in that sense, they're actually kind of more part of the absolute truth. So therefore, by serving those devotees, then you're also serving Krishna. So, next thing is that Prabhupada makes a statement in the purport. He said that preaching is the best service to the Lord. So, why is that the case? Why isn't Why isn't other services, like, you know, managing a temple or pot washing or deity worship, why is preaching the best service to the Lord? Why aren't other services also good? And why, what stands out about preaching that makes it the best service? Does anyone have any ideas? Mikey? It brings more pot washers. Preaching brings more pot washers to the temple. Anything else? Rafiq? It's ways to talk about Krishna. By preaching, you're talking about Krishna. And when you're talking about Krishna, that's the best. That's a good answer. So that's actually a really good answer. In fact, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says that the reason why preaching is the best service is because there's three things going on when you're preaching. There's shravanam, there's, you know, hearing going on. You know, somebody is hearing the glories of the Lord about Krishna. There's kirtanam going on. There's speaking, glorifications of Krishna going on. And there's smaranam, some kind of remembrance. So it's like these three most potent forms of devotional service that are going on when preaching is going on. So therefore, preaching is the best. Whereas other kinds of service, it may or may not have those elements. Like, it is possible to wash pots and not be engaged in hearing and chanting and remembering the Lord. It's possible. You're still doing service, perhaps for the mission of spreading Krishna consciousness, but it's possible that your mind might not be there in the hearing and chanting and remembering. Whereas when you're preaching, your mind has to be doing those. You have to be doing those things. It's like the main thing of what, that is the definition of preaching, more or less. So the trick is, if you are doing these other things, like, you know, administration, cleaning, or whatever, you can also incorporate elements of preaching while you're doing those things. So then you can be hearing, you could be teaching, telling others about Krishna, you could be remembering Krishna. You know, Jayananda is a good example of this. You know, Jayananda Prabhu, Prabhupada's disciple. He used to be, like, working on cars and stuff at the temple, and he always used to be preaching to people while he was fixing things, and, you know, so it's very possible to do it, but so anyway, that's the preaching. Another thing that kind of stood out to me, especially in the purport, is that Prabhupada said that by such preaching, the preacher becomes satisfied, and those to whom he preaches are also satisfied. So another reason why preaching is the best service, one, because the most potent forms of devotional service are going on, hearing, chanting, remembering at the same time. And the second is that it's satisfying all around. You know, the person who's being preached to is satisfied, the preacher is satisfied. Later in the purport, Prabhupada says that by this preaching, the whole world becomes satisfied. It's an opportunity. That's how we can make a peaceful world. And then it also says that the Lord is satisfied. So it's just like satisfaction all around. It's like a no-lose kind of a thing. And for those who have done preaching, you know, they know this. They've experienced the satisfaction that comes from preaching. You know, most of us, pretty much all of us are here, are products of some mercy from some devotee's preaching efforts. So, you know, as recipients, we all are aware of the satisfaction we get from being the recipients of that preaching, that mercy. But then also, preaching is also satisfying. I'm just thinking of the example of Jai Jagannath, how he spent, I don't know, 10, 12 years here in the temple, and especially when he first moved into the temple wasn't, you know, there were a lot of problems going on in the temple. It was kind of going through a dark period, you know, quote unquote, in the sense that there's so many issues and there's very few brahmacharis. He was practically here by himself for some period of time. So it was a very difficult situation to kind of exist in. But Jai Jagannath said that the thing that kind of kept him going through this whole thing was the fact that he was preaching. So he kind of didn't really pay so much attention to all the things that were going around. He just focused on his own hearing and chanting and remembering. And then he also kind of taught that to others. You know, so he used to get groups of people that, you know, gathered together in his room, and he, you know, always was preaching about Krishna. And that was satisfying enough for him that it didn't really matter. He wasn't bothered by so much of the other things that were going on in his environment. So there's different kinds of ways in which devotees feel satisfaction when they're preaching. So the way a sadhaka feels satisfied when he's preaching, it's a little different than the way like a pure devotee might feel satisfied when he's preaching. So generally, for sadhakas or for most people, that you'll never fully feel satisfied until you actually enter into your relationship, your eternal relationship with Krishna. Like, until you're like seeing Krishna face to face, until you're at that level where you're in your real identity and your relationship with Krishna, only then are you fully satisfied. Until then, there will be some kind of dissatisfaction to some degree or another. So we can all expect that it's not going to be perfectly satisfying, you know, the whole way. But preaching is the thing that gets us, it's the activity that we can do that makes us most satisfied, that gets us going in that direction. So the way, you know, so when a sadhaka who's preaching, when a sadhaka is preaching, especially when when you're performing sadhana, like especially like raganuga sadhana, when you're preaching, one derives pleasure by thinking that in the future I will attain prema. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said that was the way in which devotees become satisfied by preaching, is that they're thinking that one day I will attain prema by this hearing and chanting and remembering, telling others about Krishna. And then so by preaching, one's bhakti becomes steady. One achieves the highest bhakti, param bhakti. And then one can ultimately realize his identity as, you know, in relationship to Krishna. So preaching has, you know, has good results if you do it properly. This is what it leads to. So that, therefore, sometimes we are advised that the safest rasa is kirtan rasa. Kirtan rasa is the safest rasa. You know, kirtan rasa means like, you know, giving Bhagavatam class, speaking about the glories of the Lord, you know, book distributing books, telling people about, you know, the Lord's message, giving them books, preaching in some way or another, just preaching. That's like if you're directly doing that, that is the safest rasa to be in. It's the most satisfying and the most enlivening. So if you're not doing that, or if you're in a situation where you find it difficult to do that, like, I don't know, you're so busy doing so many other things that you can't engage in preaching directly, then you should think about ways in which you can adjust your situation where you can actually engage in preaching, because that's the thing that will actually make you satisfied. You know, I was told that if you're finding yourself in a situation where you're finding yourself not having enough time to preach, you should demand that preaching is in your schedule, and you should really arrange it so that it happens. Demand it if you must. And by demanding that preaching service, that is actually true selfishness. So if you're selfish and you sense that, no, I have to preach, I don't care if it might affect others or not. You should care, obviously, but you should make sure that preaching is there. And that is real surrender also. So pure devotees, Ananya Bhaktas, when they're feeling satisfied, when they're preaching, their life is practically maintained by preaching. They can't live without preaching. They have to do it. They must talk about, you know, the sweet name, fame, glories, pastimes, qualities of Krishna. They have to. It's like part of them. And then they just feel satisfied by doing that. And it's like a must. It's like in their nature. So the Lord is also satisfied by when this preaching is going on. The Lord is satisfied. Here are the two verses in the purport. Bhagavad Gita 18:69. You know, Krishna says that if you teach others this message of Bhagavad Gita, like I taught you, Arjuna, then for those people that do that, they are very, very dear to me. So it's very obvious that those who are preaching are very, very dear to Krishna. Lord Chaitanya, another incident of Lord Chaitanya speaking to the Korma Brahmana, telling him to stay where he is. You just preach the message of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam to those who you see. And in this way become a guru and become a preacher. And then sometimes the Lord, I mean, yeah, he gives general instructions that he wants everybody to be a preacher, but every now and then he'll also like tell specific devotees, you must preach, you have to preach. This is your service to me. This is the way you can please me, is by preaching. So I remember hearing that Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he was having darshan, or it's some interaction with Prabhupada, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj said that Prabhupada told him that that Prabhupada was actually in the spiritual world, in Goloka, and Krishna asked him, will you please go down to the material world and preach? And Prabhupada said, I did not want to go. I did not want to go. I was very happy with Krishna, but I did not want to go. But Krishna asked me, and he insisted, you must go. I will arrange for all of your comforts. You go and you write the books, and after you're done with that, then you can come back to me. So apparently that's what Prabhupada said to Tamal Krishna Maharaj. So if you're like a super, super pure devotee, Krishna will tell you, this is what I want you to do. There's a lot of really, really nice pastimes with Prabhupada and preaching, and how he got into preaching, especially like before Prabhupada came to the West. All there's really, really sweet pastimes of Prabhupada when he was in India, when he was living in Vrindavan, and even before in the householder, which were kind of like signs of him becoming like a great preacher. Like I had one story that I pastime that I heard recently was that there was this one gentleman who lived like just a few doors down from Prabhupada's room in the Radha Damodar temple. So this gentleman, he lived right next to the Rupa Goswami's samadhi, just in a few doors down, so he could practically see Rupa Goswami's samadhi right from where he was. So I guess not too long ago, there's this one of Prabhupada's disciples, or one devotee, he or she was taking care of Prabhupada's room in the Radha Damodar temple. And this devotee noticed that there was this elderly gentleman that came in, and he kind of like went to Prabhupada's Murti, which is there in Prabhupada's room in Radha Damodar temple. And when he went up to Prabhupada's Murti, he just started crying. And it was very moving for this other devotee to see that somebody could just go up to Prabhupada and just start crying like that. So then this devotee, he or she, they followed this devotee home to find out where this devotee is from, because they wanted to ask them questions and like, no, why are you crying? What's going on? Do you have any remembrances of Srila Prabhupada? You know, because you seem like an elderly gentleman. Maybe you know something about Prabhupada. So then they did. They followed him home. They found out where he lived. And then they went up to him, and then they asked, I saw that you came to Prabhupada's room. Do you have any memories of Srila Prabhupada? That's what the devotee asked. And then this elderly gentleman, he just started crying again. He just started crying before he could speak. And then after he kind of composed himself, he said that, you know, I've lived in Vrindavan for 90 years. And right here in the heart of Vrindavan, right next to Rupa Goswami Samadhi, I used to see Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Bhaktivedanta Swami, often. And I was just so amazed. I've lived in Vrindavan for 90 years. I've seen so many Vaishnavas, so many sadhus that, you know, come and go through Vrindavan. But none of them stood out like Prabhupada did. Because especially Prabhupada's sadhana, how he practiced sadhana when he was staying in the Radhadhar temple was just phenomenal. You know, he used to spend hours and hours hardly getting any sleep, hardly eating, just constantly, you know, writing books, doing his bhajan, chanting, you know, so that that's all he was doing. And then in those days, his room in Radhadhar, the Damodar temple, was quite austere. It isn't like it is now. There was not even like a door on the wall in Prabhupada's room. It was just like a little cloth that was not even like a really nice cloth that acted as a door. There's just like, you know, dirt floor, and there's no walls or anything. It was just kind of like an open space almost. So he was just very, very impressed by Prabhupada's sadhana, and he just always has that remembrance of Prabhupada. And then over time, this gentleman remembers hearing these like loud cries and callings in the middle of the night. You know, this man heard these loud callings, and they were happening pretty regularly. You know, every now and then this man would hear these loud cries. So then one night, it was like a full moon night or something, he got on his roof or whatever, and he tried to understand where this noise was coming from. And then he looked at Rupa Goswami's samadhi, and he saw Prabhupada was there, and he saw Prabhupada was kind of bent over, kind of sweeping Rupa Goswami's samadhi. And when he was sweeping, he was loudly crying out, you know, "Hey, Gurudev, hey, Gurudev, give me your mercy, give me your mercy. Hey, Rupa, hey, Sanatana, give me your mercy, give me your mercy. Without your mercy, how am I able to do what you asked me to do? Please give me your mercy." So he was just like crying like this while he was sweeping Rupa Goswami's samadhi. Prabhupada was asked to, you know, preach to the English-speaking parts of the world. And in order to do that, he needed to he was trying to get the mercy of Rupa Goswami and his Gurudev. So I thought that was a very, very nice story of Prabhupada, how he has this like mood of being a preacher, and how he kind of takes it. And there are many other really nice pastimes of Prabhupada before he came to the West, how he kind of prepared himself for preaching, or how it was prepared for him to be preached, or so for him to preach. There's this other devotee, Prabhupada's godbrother. His name is Nayananda Das Babaji Maharaj. He was younger than Prabhupada, and he was just like a young brahmachari when this particular pastime took place. There was this, you know, in Bhaktisiddhanta, he used to have this, he has this temple in Mayapur, the Chaitanya temple. And Bhaktisiddhanta, he used to kind of go back and forth on his balcony there to kind of like plan out how to preach this Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. And sometimes he had these big gatherings of his disciples and followers. So at one time there's this big gathering of all of Bhaktisiddhanta's disciples at the Chaitanya Temple, and Bhaktisiddhanta was, you know, kind of in this figuring out how to preach mode. All of his big preachers were there, the sannyasis, the brahmacharis. It was kind of a packed kind of a scene. And then Bhaktisiddhanta, he kind of went into his room. He went into his room, closed the door, and then didn't interact. He's all alone, and everybody else is just kind of in the courtyard there, waiting for Bhaktisiddhanta to come out or whatever. So then, after Bhaktisiddhanta went in his room, Prabhupada came. Srila Prabhupada, our Abhay Charan, I think it's Abhay Charan Prabhu, came at that time. He came. He was a grihastha at the time. And he came, but he came a little late. This was after Bhaktisiddhanta came out, addressed everybody, and went inside. So then Prabhupada, he was going to go up to see if Bhaktisiddhanta was there, but he wasn't addressing people at that time. So then he just very meekly and humbly started walking back to the courtyard and kind of going down the stairs, and he was about ready to leave. So then, just as Prabhupada was walking away and he had his back to where Bhaktisiddhanta was, Bhaktisiddhanta, he kind of came out of the door, you know, he opened the door, and then he called out, "Ah, Haribol, come here. And then he motioned to all of the brahmacharis and sannyasis and everybody there to kind of like make a path for you know, Bhajaran to come and see him. And everybody was just so astonished. This is the remembrance of Nayananda Das Babaji. He was a young brahmachari at the time, so he was quite amazed to see, oh, Bhaktisiddhanta is calling a householder to come and see him. So then Prabhupada came up, and then Bhaktisiddhanta took Prabhupada into his room, closed the door, and then they had like a private meeting for like 15, 20 minutes in front of everybody. And this was totally unheard of. Nobody has ever, hardly anybody has spent that much time alone with Bhaktisiddhanta before. So then when Prabhupada came out, he came out in a very kind of meek, humble way. He was just walking away. And Nayananda Das Babaji was just like, "You have to tell me what happened in there." He was really trying to like get the nectar from Prabhupada. What did he say? What was he doing? And then Prabhupada just humbly, he didn't really want to tell anybody what was said or what was going on. But he just humbly said, "My Guru Maharaj ordered me to preach in the English speaking, preach in English to the English speaking parts of the world. But I don't know, maybe you can help me with that." So then he was telling Nayananda, "Maybe you can help me." So this is another kind of how Prabhupada got this instruction to preach from his spiritual master. And there was another one too. And this was Nayananda Das Babaji also remembered this one. This was another time when all the devotees were going on a Gaura Mandala Parikrama. Bhaktisiddhanta was leading like a parikrama around Mayapur, I guess. And this was like shortly before Bhaktisiddhanta disappeared from the planet. And he, so in the middle of the Gaura Mandala Parikrama, one of his big sannyasis came back from preaching in England. You know, Bhaktisiddhanta, he sent out some of his biggest preachers to England to try to preach to the English-speaking parts of the world. And so he was, you know, it was a big event because he basically, the whole Gaudiya Math, they collected so much money, you know, just by brahmacharis going out and begging and collecting madhukari. And then all that money that they got from that, they used to sponsor these preachers to go out to the English-speaking parts of the world to try to, you know, fulfill Lord Chaitanya's mission. So then Ban Maharaj, he came back after having gone there and right in the middle of this kind of parikrama. So then Bhaktisiddhanta got in this mood, this like really intense mood of like preaching and things. And so he addressed everybody. He started addressing everybody. He said, "My Gurudev, my father, Bhaktivinod Thakur, he had these visions of this, you know, this of the whole world, every town and village chanting the holy names of the Lord. And in order to try to, you know, make this vision happen, he wrote publications in English. You know, he wrote Lord Chaitanya's or the Mahaprabhu's Life and Precepts or something. I don't remember the title. Anyway, he wrote a book about Lord Chaitanya, and he sent it to different English-speaking parts of the world. But it wasn't so successful. It didn't really reach. It didn't really catch on so much. So my father, my Guru Dev, kind of really wanted this to happen. And my mother, Bhagavati Devi, she also understood the desire of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And on her deathbed, she personally asked me if I could help fulfill Bhaktivinoda Thakur's desire of preaching to the English-speaking parts of the world and to the whole world this chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. You know, and in Bengal, also everywhere, but in Bengal particularly, whenever somebody is dying and they ask you to do something, you know, it's like you're obligated, you have to do whatever they say. So Bhaktisiddhanta was sharing this with all of his disciples, that my mother asked me, my father asked me to do this, and now here I am, I'm trying to fulfill Mahaprabhu's prediction. I did that by sending my disciples out to the English-speaking parts of the world to try to preach this, and they've come back. So how is this going to, I'm just wondering, how is this going to happen? How is this prediction of Lord Chaitanya actually going to come true, that this chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is going to spread all over the world? How is it going to happen? He was saying like this. So then he kind of paused in his lecture, and he just started like surveying everybody in the audience. He started on one side, and he just kind of slowly surveyed everybody. And then when he finally got to the part in the group of people where our Prabhupada was, you know, Nayananda Das Babaji, he was one of the brahmacharis, so he was a little bit closer to Bhaktisiddhanta, and then Srila Prabhupada was behind him in a little way, you know. So then when Bhaktisiddhanta was looking in the direction toward Prabhupada, Nayananda Das Babaji thought, oh my God, he's looking at me, and then he just became like really scared almost. But then he realized, oh, he's actually looking at our Srila Prabhupada. So then, and then he just stopped, and he just looked at Prabhupada for quite some time, especially compared to all of his other glances. He just stopped and was fixed at Prabhupada. And then he paused. He didn't say anything for some time. And then he made like this bold, big prediction. So then he said that the next one of my disciples who travels to the English-speaking parts of the world, however long that may be in the future, you know, whoever is the next one that does that, he will be successful. He will bring back the whole world. That's what Bhaktisiddhanta said. So Bhaktisiddhanta predicted that the next one who would go out, he would bring back the whole world. And lo and behold, Prabhupada, he was the next one that went out, and he brought back the whole world, more or less to Mayapur and, you know, Vrindavan and to Krishna consciousness. So that's another nice, beautiful story about preaching. And there was another one too, and by another godbrother of Prabhupada. This godbrother's name was Bhakti Kamal Madhusudan Maharaj, I think. He had a really sweet... He remembers a really sweet pastime of Prabhupada. So this was in, I think it was in Bombay, Bhakti Kamal Madhusudan Maharaj. He used to be this like really young, enthusiastic preacher, and he was really, really good. He used to go to like villages, and he used to convert the whole village to Gaudiya Vaishnavism, and then Bhaktisiddhanta used to come and initiate the whole village. So this godbrother Prabhupada was quite powerful in the sense that he was a really, really good preacher, and therefore he's also very close with Bhaktisiddhanta. So he was the one who kind of narrated, he always used to be, so he's the one who kind of narrated this story about Prabhupada. So one time there was this, you know, another nice gathering of big devotees in the Gaudiya Math in Bombay, I think. and you know all the big preachers were there, and Prabhupada was also there. So that it's similar to the story to the previous stories. And then Bhaktisiddhanta was in this mood of like, how is this going to happen? How are we going to preach this Krishna consciousness all over the world? How is it going to happen? So then he just, like, Sridhar Maharaj was there, Bhakti Saranga. Anyway, all like the big devotee preachers in the Gaudiya Math were there. So then at one point, he just says, who will do it? Who will do this? Who will bring this out to the other parts of the world? And then nobody was really stepping forward saying, I will do it or anything. So then Bhaktisiddhanta told Sridhar Maharaj, Sridhar Maharaj, you do it. You know, just right in front of everybody, he told Sridhar Maharaj to do it. And then Sridhar Maharaj, he just said, that is so against my nature. My nature is to be very recluse and, isolated, and I'm not really that much of a preacher. Plus, I was trained in British English. If I go to America, I don't even understand American English. This is so against my nature, I just cannot do it, in front of everybody. So then Bhaktisiddhanta said, okay. So then he turned to this Bhakti Kamal Madhusudan, Maharaj devotee, who was a brahmachari at the time, and he said, oh, you do it. You're such a great preacher. You're converting villages, and you're doing so much nice preaching work. You go to the West, and you preach this Krishna consciousness to those people. And then when Bhakti Kamal Madhusudan Maharaj heard this, he was stunned. He just started crying right then and there. And he fell at Bhaktisiddhanta's feet, and he begged, Gurudev, please don't ask me to do this. Relieve me from this order. I cannot do this. I hardly even know English. I would be so afraid of failing. You know, if I failed, I feel like I would fall down, and I just cannot do this. Please relieve me from this order. And Bhaktisiddhanta just kind of patted him on the head and said, all right. And then he said to everybody, anyway, none of you all have to worry. Abhay Babu, he'll do everything. He'll do everything. You don't have to worry about this. to everybody. So then that's how it ended. So there's all these predictions about Prabhupada being like this big preacher. So then another thing in this purport is that preaching should be done without discrimination. And then the example of how preaching could be done with lack of discrimination is this Daridra Narayan concept. I think it was established by Swami Vivekananda. The idea is that that by service to the poor, that is service to Narayan. So by serving the poor, you're also serving Narayan. So you can see the inherent discrimination in this idea. That you're discriminating, you're doing service to the poor, but, why just the poor? The Lord is in every living being, and so why just the poor? He's also in the rich. So it's not you're not properly discriminating, you are discriminating. So for super pure devotees, they don't we are encouraged to discriminate somewhat if we're Madhyama Adhikaris. Or in the Madhyama platform, we are meant to discriminate. We're supposed to preach to the innocent, avoid the envious, make friendship with the devotees, worship the Lord. We're supposed to make discriminations. But with super pure devotees on the Uttama platform, they don't even really make such distinctions. So this is just another quick little story with Prabhupada, because I've been hearing this really awesome kind of memories of Prabhupada before he came to the West, of how Prabhupada discriminated exhibited this not really discriminating with who he's preaching to. So there was this one milkman in Vrindavan, who, is quite elderly. And Prabhupada used to, engage in these intense austerities in his room, writing, doing bhajan, and not eating very much. And sometimes Prabhupada used to go do madhukari. And that's how he got his maintenance. That's how he got his food, is he just went and bagged a little madhukari, went back and then did his study in bhajan and writing and everything. So Prabhupada didn't usually go to these big gatherings where all the sadhus gathered and they had a big feast or whatever for all the sadhus. Prabhupada didn't really go to those. He just begged a little madhukari from whoever nearby, and then when he begged madhukari, he always used to preach to the person who he begged madhukari from. So there's this one milkman who Prabhupada used to go to get milk, a little bit of milk, and then he preached to him, and then he would go back and continue his sadhana. So then, in the hot summer months in Vrindavan, Prabhupada didn't even come out and beg madhukari. He was just so absorbed in his writing and his bhajan that he did not even go out and beg madhukari. So he was hardly eating anything, and he was just so absorbed. So then this milkman who was used to Prabhupada coming to beg a little madhukari or something, he was worried about Prabhupada. So then this milkman, he sent his son to go deliver milk to Prabhupada. And then so the son, he used to go regularly to deliver milk to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada used to develop this nice relationship with the milkman's son. And then one time, the milkman's son went to go deliver milk to Prabhupada, and he came at a time when Prabhupada was so deeply absorbed in chanting. He was so deeply absorbed in chanting that when he came there, his eyes were just closed, but there was not just like little droplets of tears coming out, but it was like a lot of tears. He was so many tears coming from Prabhupada's eyes when he was chanting. He was so deeply absorbed in this. And the son said, I've never heard the holy name like this being chanted before. Never heard the holy name like this being chanted. So he was so absorbed in chanting. And then generally the custom is that if somebody's really absorbed in samadhi or chanting like that, you just kind of leave them alone. You don't disturb them. So he wasn't planning on disturbing him. But then this milkman's son, he noticed that there was this scorpion that was like kind of coming closer to Prabhupada, like with the stinger up. He was ready to, they're dangerous potentially, so the scorpion coming up to, potentially harm Prabhupada. So then he was wondering, he's in a dilemma. He didn't want to disturb Prabhupada, but at the same time there's the scorpion coming to, who might do something to Prabhupada. So then as the scorpion got closer and closer and closer, this milkman's son, he just had to say something. So he said, look, look, look. And then Prabhupada, from his meditation, his samadhi, he just kind of slowly kind of got out of that trance. And he just looked right at the milkman's son with these like super intense like eyes filled with love and prema and like this ecstasy. And it was the way the son described it. It was like this intense look of love that just emanated from Prabhupada when he came out of this, and looked at him. So he didn't even look at the scorpion right away. And he just looked at him. And then slowly he looked over to the scorpion, very calmly, not disturbed at all in any bit. And then this milkman's son, he said, can I sweep it out of the room? Can I get it out of here? And then Prabhupada just said, no, don't disturb him. He's also a devotee. So Prabhupada can see like this. He can see that even a scorpion is a devotee. So this is not discrimination. Now, this is not discriminating because he's on the Uttama platform. He sees everybody as a devotee. And that's why perhaps Prabhupada was able to preach to the West, is because he had this vision. He was able to see everybody as a devotee. So he was able to preach to people who were so fallen and degraded, like American hippies or something, or people who are so degraded in the West, and see them as devotees, and he treated them like that. So I'll end here. Is there anything anybody would like to add to this discussion? Jordan? I guess. Yeah, he's going to get it.
Is it ever like too early to start preaching, or is it like we're told we just kind of like jump right into it? But like Bhaktisiddhanta prepared for how many years? Prabhupada, how many years did he spend just getting absorbed?
Right.
And we're just coming straight off the, you know, Kali Yuga whirlwind.
Yeah.
And we're told to start preaching.
Right.
I know you can learn as you go, but also, is it, I just wonder if you could speak on this, is it, should we try to just prepare ourselves more while we're doing it, or could we?
Yeah, so I've heard, the way I've heard this described is that generally, preaching is like a, you know, very, if you look at the definition of preaching as just, you know, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam about Krishna, which is that what preaching is, everybody should do that. But when it comes to like preaching in the sense of like, you know, trying to like bring people to Krishna consciousness and take that active role of like being the main instrument for helping this person connect with Krishna, generally I've heard it described that for those who are kind of new, they, you know, they're not, maybe not so developed in their bhajan, and they're maybe not so knowledgeable in the shastras, that they can still, it's not that they're doing like the direct preaching, so to speak, to maybe new people, for example, but they work in a team. So there is the main preacher who is doing like the preaching, and then there are those that are kind of assisting the main preacher in his preaching work. So then they work as a team, and they help bring people to the preacher who then actually does the preaching. So it's like teamwork. So everybody can participate in teamwork preaching. But generally, yes, it is true that in order for your preaching to have any sort of serious effect, the more advanced you are, the more effective your preaching will be. You know, like Prabhupada, you know, that we hear in the Guru Vandanam prayers that, you know, from him ecstatic prema emanates. You know, so one who has prema, when that prema emanates out, you know, even if he doesn't even say anything, but just by his own prema, he's able to preach and convert people to Krishna consciousness. That's really what does it for people. that's really powerful preaching. So that's why we hear examples like Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta, so many other devotees, they first intensely engaged in sadhana. Like we hear all these Prabhupada's godbrothers, they really admired Srila Prabhupada's sadhana. That was one of the things that stood out to them, was how serious he was in his bhajan, his writing, his austerities. That was the thing that made it so... And then through doing all of that, he became very potent. I mean, he was already very potent, but that was the instrument through which it became manifested. So then we can follow in the footsteps. We might not be able to do it in the same degree as those devotees, but we can certainly... work in that direction and follow in their footsteps. But at the same time, we also hear that Lord Chaitanya, he preached to Korma Brahmana. Korma Brahmana, and you know, he was just a householder, and I guess he was a very great devotee because he got darshan of Lord Chaitanya, but we don't hear anything about him performing great big austerities and doing great amounts of sadhana. And then Lord Chaitanya told him, you should preach. You should preach the message of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Stay where you are and you preach, you become a guru. So whether he was actually like, had performed tons and tons of sadhana or not, it doesn't say. But since he was a householder and he was so engaged in so many things, then who knows? He got darshan, so he was certainly advanced in some way. So that's a general rule of thumb, is that for your preaching to be effective, you should seriously practice sadhana, bhakti, charinishna.
Thanks, Ru. Yeah, I just wanted to share an angle also, because if you think of these activities, shravanam, kirtanam, and smaranam, the devotees can do that. You know, you can get two devotees together in a room. They can close the door. they can hear and chant together.
Right.
So that's, in one sense, preaching. But then there's also, it seems in the purport, it's also mentioning more this emphasis of going out.
Yeah,
you know,
both.
So preaching is the best service. It's interesting to consider also in terms of, you know, the Kali Yuga, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given this instruction actually to everyone, that you have to become a preacher and you have to deliver one. So I think it's tied in with Kali Yuga, because in other ages, you know, the process may have been peaceful meditation, Satya Yuga.
Mm.
But in Kali Yuga, Mahaprabhu's mission is to spread the Sankirtan movement. So I think preaching has particular potency
right.
in this current time period, because that is his order and his instruction. And then in ISKCON also you see that there are many different activities. But what's helpful for all devotees to understand is that because this is a preaching movement, all those activities are part and parcel aspects of the preaching. So if they have that consciousness when they're worshiping the deity, you know, that this is not separate necessarily from preaching, but this is an aspect of Prabhupada's strategy to preach Krishna consciousness, to serve Mahaprabhu, or washing the pots. You know, this is the bhoga is offered to the deity and the devotees, you know, so they can continue to carry on the mission and all these things. So if you look at it in the consciousness, everything is actually connected to preaching. Just wanted to share that.
Right. Yeah, those are all really nice points. Yeah, in the verse here it says, tushyati is satisfied. So that's the same word that's used in Bhagavad Gita 10.9, Machchitta, I don't remember the Sanskrit. But anyway, they said tushanti cha ramanti cha, that they, you know, devotees, they derive great satisfaction and bliss enlightening, discussing and enlightening each other about Krishna. So, it's yes, outreach, you know, preaching to others, but it's also amongst ourselves preaching. And then also, you know, like you said, going in a room and hearing and chanting together.
Yeah, I think the main idea is Krishna's desire actually is that all living entities come back to him, Mahaprabhu. So that's a very, that desire is manifest by devotees going out and trying to share Krishna consciousness. That's actually fulfilling the desire of the Lord, because he's full in himself. But it's explained that, you know, on occasion he feels the lack of the other sleeping conditioned souls. So whenever we take up that process, and whoever gets involved, you know, they're helping fulfill that desire of the Lord.
Right. That's the only thing that Krishna does not have. What is the only thing that Krishna does not have? Huh? The only thing that Krishna does not have. Krishna has everything. What is the only thing that Krishna does not have? Huh? Yeah, like the hearts of the conditioned souls. It's the one thing he doesn't have. So that's what he wants. So then by helping people give their hearts to Krishna, Krishna's satisfied by that, and then he reciprocates to those who helped in that, bringing those hearts to Krishna by giving them steadiness and bhakti, giving them, you know, the highest bhakti, giving them love also, and but it is nice though to be directly involved in preaching in some way or another. For those who've done direct preaching versus just doing like pot washing and other things, yes, you can have a consciousness where you are doing it to help support the preaching mission and all this, and that's good, but there is something special with actually doing the hearing and chanting and kirtan with other preaching, like doing the direct preaching thing. That there is something special there, and that's actually what's really, really satisfying. It's not that pot washing is not satisfying, or it's not important, or it's not good, but that direct preaching, it has its own level and its own like special satisfaction levels and everything. So it's nice if everybody could try to get that kind of direct preaching, because that's what will really satisfy you and keep you here in the long run. If you just do pots all day and that's your only service, we have experience. Those devotees don't last very long. But those devotees who are very involved in preaching, speaking, glorifying, you know, giving classes, going out preaching to people, they're super fired up and enthusiastic, and they actually, you know, last a very long time, you know. This has been my experience, at least. That's from what I've seen. Anyway, we'll end here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Yeah, but they're